I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Americans brought about major political change this morning, and it didn't stop at the borders of Kansas and Missouri. This hour, we'll analyze what voters signaled at the ballot box as both sides of the state line returned incumbents to Washington. Kansans placed more moderates in the state house, and Missourians went for a full Republican slate of state officers. We'll examine the major ballot issue Show Me State voters decided. They resisted taxes on tobacco, supported campaign finance reform, and imposed a voter ID law that could end up in the courts. It's an election night hangover on Up to Date after this hour's news. Good morning and welcome to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. I'm Steve Kraske. The voters in Missouri and Kansas have spoken, and now what does it all mean? We're going to sort that out this hour as we run through a whole litany of races that were on Tuesday's ballot in our two states. First, I should note that President Barack Obama is scheduled to make a statement this hour, and when that happens, we'll join NPR coverage of the president's remarks. But first, let's get right to it, and we'll begin with the races for the U.S. Senate and House yesterday, and we're joined first by Kansas Congressman Kevin Yoder, who was in a tough fight against Democrat Jay Seide yesterday. Congressman, welcome to Up to Date, and congratulations on another win.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate being back on Up to Date.
How tough was this campaign for you, Congressman?
Well, each campaign's different, and we knew with the national election being so divisive and Hillary Clinton trending well in certain parts of my district that might create down ballot issues no matter sort of who was on the other side. We ran a hard campaign. There were about $2 million spent in negative ads, mostly from Washington Democratic Party ads coming in to influence this race, and so it became very expensive. But I have a lot of faith in the voters of the 3rd District. They're highly educated. They are very discerning. They're high information, high volume voters. And at the end of the day, we were pleased to win with an over 10-point victory. And considering how challenging the race was nationally, I think that's a pretty good outcome for our team.
But let's turn to President Trump's administration here. What do you anticipate will be the first order of business for the new Congress when it comes to implementing Donald Trump's campaign promises? Where are we going here?
Well, I think that remains to be seen. Certainly there was mixed messages coming out of last night's election. We lost seats in the House and at least lost one Senate seat. And so I think voters are looking for us to work together and to, not veer off in one direction, but to try to find a way to solve problems. And so, Trump has certainly laid out a number of his ideas related to trade and job creation, investment in infrastructure. And I'll be looking to figure out what are those points of commonality that we can work together as a Congress. I think, when Democrats had the House and Senate, the presidency in 2009 and 10, they sort of took the position that they needed to do every single thing without really working to try to get the tough work it takes to get, Republican support for a number of their ideas. And that really, I think, affected the outcome. So I'll be looking to figure out how we can get, friends like Emanuel Cleaver and other people to figure out where we can solve problems together. We look, certainly issues like job creation, our exploding deficit, foreign policy, defeating ISIS. I'll continue to push for investments in things like public education, medical research, taking care of our veterans.
Right.
And so there may be some surprises along the way. I think the thing about Donald Trump has been that, he has taken positions on lots of things, but I think there's still a lot of unknowns as to what his governing style will actually be like.
Congressman, just finally here, how much of a mandate did Donald Trump pick up last night?
Well, I think the mandate was certainly for change. He surprised the country. He surprised the pundits. It would be being talked about for a long time, probably one of the biggest political upsets in American history. The first time we've elected a businessman or someone who's not a politician to this seat in a long time. And so I think he certainly has a mandate to change the way Washington works. Whether he has a mandate for all of his ideas, of course, That's only as good as the election that you know, on the day of the election. I think one of the things that politicians forget is that they need to continually pitch and sell their ideas. And just because you're elected doesn't mean that every single thing you stand for is where the country is. You've got to go out and pitch bold initiatives. And we have some tough problems. I mean, the challenges we're facing are very difficult, and they're not going to be solved if the public is not behind the solutions.
Yeah.
And so I think he's got a tall order. But I think the mandate is people want to see something different out of Washington, and that spoke loud and clear last night. It surprised a lot of people.
That's Kansas Congressman Kevin Yoder from Kansas's 3rd District. He won a big re-election win last night. Congressman, thanks again very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
Back here in the studio now, I'm joined by a distinguished panel of political pundits. Joining me here, Dave Helling, my colleague at the Kansas City Star. David, good morning.
Good morning.
Kansas City Councilwoman Jolie Justice. Councilwoman, nice to have you.
Good morning, Steve.
And from the Star, another one of my colleagues, Missouri State House reporter Jason Hancock. Jason, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And sitting next to me here, KCUR's Brian Ellison, who was here anchoring our coverage last night. He's host of State House Blend Missouri. Brian, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
As we make our way through the results today, we want to hear your reactions as well. You can call us at 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCU up to date. We're also wondering, what's the one issue or candidate you're happiest about as a result of what happened last night? 816-235-2888. Okay, Dave Helling, Republican incumbent Roy Blunt has defeated Democrat Jason Kander 49-46, a 3-point win. Why could an insider like Roy Blunt win in a state that an outsider like Donald Trump carried by 20 points?
Well,
help me here.
First of all, they're both Republicans. That's always helpful in an election like this, Steve. And also, it was a bit of a wave election. Across the country in down ballot races, Pat Toomey won in Pennsylvania. I think Kelly Ayotte won in New Hampshire. Rob Portman in Ohio. Just go down the list. Marco Rubio in Florida. It seemed as if the Republican Party, on the coattails of Donald Trump, picked up 3, maybe 4 points in virtually every contested Senate race and in a lot of House races as well. So, you know, I think if you had Roy Blunt in this room today, he would admit that he was dragged across the finish line by the top of the ticket, which, of course, is very unusual. We thought the opposite would be the case, that Trump would be a drag on the ticket, but he did not turn out to be that. So I think it was basically they shared a party and that there was a bit of a gust at the back of the wind of the top of the ticket.
Brian Ellison, you buy that?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, Trump won Missouri by 19 points,
19
Steve.
Points.
19 points. So
powerhouse performance.
I don't think there's anyone who could say that Roy Blunt would have won that race, for which even his Senate Republican colleagues thought he was dramatically underprepared, had it not been for Donald Trump's commanding victory.
Republicans and Democrats saying before the vote yesterday that 10 points was the Mason-Dixon line. If Trump did better than 10, he would pull every Republican along with him. He doubled that margin,
right,
which goes a long way to explaining what happened here.
Right, and what happened on down the ballot pretty much across the Missouri board.
Yeah. Councilman Justice Jason Kander lost last night. Big hope for the Democratic Party, not only here in Missouri, but nationally. 35-year-old Secretary of State, seeming to have a bright future. What kind of defeat is this for Democrats across Missouri and for Jason Kander?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, Secretary Kander is an amazing guy, and we are going to see more from him. So I know that he will keep moving and he will keep fighting for all the things that he was fighting for. I will tell
He's
you what,
talking
though,
about doing just that.
Absolutely. I will tell you, though, it was a very, very tough night for Democrats. And as the night kept getting later and later, it was very clear that it was going to be a clear sweep across the board. And it was tough. It was absolutely tough.
Did you see it coming?
Absolutely not. I have to tell you, I did see, well, oddly enough, Steve, on February 29th of this year, I actually predicted a Donald Trump win because I was starting to see some things happening both internationally and nationally that were very concerning. But that just made me want to work harder to make sure it didn't happen. And going into yesterday, I, like everyone else, was very optimistic.
You were seeing things like what on leap year day on February 29th?
I think the conversation that we were having as a country, coupled with the time that I spent in Jefferson City, where I knew that Missouri Missourians were, there were a lot of angry Missourians out there,
yeah.
and that Donald Trump was speaking to a lot of folks who felt disenfranchised. And couple that with the enormous response that Bernie Sanders was receiving from folks across the country, it really felt like this was going to be a year that if you were considered an insider, you were going to be tossed out.
Jason Hancock from the Star, the State House reporter for the Kansas City Star, he was in St. Louis last night hanging with Republicans, at least for part of the time, Eric Greitens' big win. What are Republicans saying today, Jason, in terms of how big a set of victories this was yesterday and what this portends for the state of Missouri?
I mean, they're obviously overwhelmingly enthusiastic. This is a transformative election in a lot of ways for Missouri. You have now Republican supermajorities that were maintained last night. The Republicans held all the seats that they needed. I think they're at 117 in the House and 24 in the Senate. Now they have a Republican governor. You know, they were able to do a lot of things despite the fact that Jay Nixon was governor the last 8 years. But now they don't have that roadblock. They don't have to worry about needing two-thirds majority to pass their agenda. They just got to get stuff to Greitens' desk. And I think you're going to see things like tougher regulations on unions in the first couple weeks of the session. They'll probably be ready for Greitens' signature by the time he's sworn in. The Missouri voters unleashed a conservative policy agenda that folks think could shape Missouri politics for the next generation.
You know, folks might remember, Julie Justice, that you were the Senate Minority Leader for a number of years in Jefferson City. How big of a day was this for Republicans in the state capitol from your vantage point?
This was a huge day for two reasons. Number one, Jason just highlighted the issue of we always had that backstop of a potential veto, and that's gone now. So that's a big deal. But number two, there were a lot of moderate Republicans that I worked with very closely over the years in Jefferson City, and they got increasingly, I think, scared over the years because of attempts to primary folks from the right and big money coming in from conservative folks. And I was hoping that we wouldn't have this sort of sweep so that they would continue to be emboldened the way we've seen, for instance, on the Kansas side of the state line. But unfortunately, I think this is going to have the kind of opposite effect, and we're going to see folks who might normally stand up and be a little more moderate continue to go down a very far right-wing path.
Brian Ellison, I want to get you here and get Dave Helling to react. You and Sam Zeff were speaking this morning on State House Blend about this idea that Missouri, of our two states, Missouri might be the more conservative state. Tell me about that.
I think you can certainly make the case based on yesterday's results. As Councilwoman Justice said, there isn't a significant moderate Republican voice, at least not with any access to leadership, in the Missouri General Assembly at this point. So it's very difficult to imagine a scenario where there's anyone really pushing back on a conservative agenda. And that could be, as Jason said, an anti-labor sort of agenda. It can be, it could result in cuts to funding for things like education and higher education, certainly. That was already on the chopping block in the last General Assembly session. And I think the prospects for things that might have enjoyed bipartisan support, such as modest limits on campaign contributions, for example, are not likely to see success in this next session.
Dave Helling, is this the culmination of a long process we've been observing in Missouri for more than a decade now of Republicans slowly gaining a greater and greater foothold in the Show Me State, and now they own the joint?
Yeah, I've said this for some time, that Missouri had a choice a decade ago to be Mississippi or Iowa, and they decided to be Mississippi in across a whole range of issues as well as the politics. I want to add something quickly to what Councilwoman Justice just talked about. The other thing to keep in mind about Jeff City is the Republicans have really decided to blow up the use of the filibuster in the Senate. That was the last bulwark, really, of minority Democrats, and that tool in some ways may be taken away as well. But broadly speaking, look at the numbers at the top of the ticket, Steve. In 2008, Barack Obama and John McCain basically tied in Missouri, but Obama won the country by 6 points. So, in essence, he underperformed by 6 points, or McCain, the Republican, was plus six. Romney won the state by 9 points, this time Donald Trump by 19. I mean, that graph just draws itself. It's becoming a very Republican state. Claire McCaskill, the only statewide Democrat left. You do have pockets of urban representation with Congressman Cleaver and Congressman Clay over in the St. Louis area. and some pockets of state legislative races that are still in the hands of the Democrats in the urban areas. But broadly speaking, yes, Missouri has become a Republican state, much in the much like Mississippi, Louisiana, Georgia, Alabama. I mean, it's very much like that now and will be that way for some time, it seems to me.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or you can tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. Your reactions to last night's stunning, in many cases, election results in both of our states. I'm joined also here by Sam Zeff from State House Blend Kansas, also with KCUR. This notion that Kansas is the more moderate state is going to jar a lot of people out there, Sam. What do you make of it?
Well, it certainly jarred me. And I have to say, this looking at what happened in Missouri yesterday is a little like going to your Netflix classics and going back and looking at the movie, because we've seen this before. This is exactly the march that Kansas made until last night. And then there were a number of Democratic gains, one Democrat gain in the Senate, 12 to 13 in the House right now, plus a lot of moderates that came in the primary. So this is going to be a very different legislature that conservative Governor Sam Brownback is going to have to deal with when they come back in January. And I have to say that this is, you know, is this this is the same movie, I think, that we're now, pardon me, seeing in Missouri. And 4 years from now or 6 years from now, are we going to be sitting around here saying, oh, man, that deep red in Missouri, maybe it's coming, it's maybe moving back to the
center. That's always the trick here, though, David, this notion that once one party dominates a state as thoroughly as the Republicans have Kansas, you know, sometimes that doesn't last forever, and we're seeing it bounce back, as Sam's pointing out here.
Right. Overreach is always a problem in one-party rule, and
that's
think
what
Missouri,
often happens
right,
in these
and
cases.
Kansas was, you know, as Sam suggests, the Turner movie classic in that regard. And he's right when he says we may be sitting here 6 or 7 years from now looking at the rubber band snap back in Missouri. But in that six-year period of time, some serious damage can be done, which we also learned in Kansas. Kansas will now spend at least a decade digging out of the problems that were caused by one-party rule. Sam Brownback's influence on Kansas policy will persist long after he leaves office, either, you know, when he's term limited out or leaves for some job with the Trump administration.
I got to cut us off. So, I think we're going to be joined here by President Barack Obama making his statement in the wake of last night's election. That's President Barack Obama addressing the nation in the wake of Donald Trump's big win last night in the presidential race. President Obama doing what presidents do, offering a positive, optimistic, forward-looking message to the country. Dave Helling, what's your reaction to it?
Well, quickly, I think it's great. I think he said the right things. I think Secretary Clinton said the right things. Donald Trump is getting high marks. I think it's going to last about 25 minutes on January 20th, and then the real work begins of politics, and all the high cards are in the hands of the Republican Party. That's just the fact of it. They control both houses of Congress and the presidency. The Democrats have very low cards, a very weak hand, and we'll see how it plays out.
Councilwoman Justice, what's your reaction to what the president just said?
I mean, obviously, this has been a morning of speeches from our leaders that we expect. And I've been very appreciative of that. It's good to hear this at a time when there's a significant portion of the population who is frankly in shock, and some of us even mourning. So I think that this is exactly the message that we needed to hear from Secretary Clinton and the president. And I look forward to a continued transition.
Brian Ellison.
The question, I think, is how much it will really do to actually salve the wounds of those who are experiencing this morning. I'm thinking especially of people of color, of LGBTQ people, of Muslims, of women in America who feel very wounded by what happened last night. Will there be healing as a result of these words, or will it feel like just so many words? And also, let's not forget that President Obama is at some part of his brain thinking about his own legacy, which he knows would have been shaped in large part by executive orders, by the Affordable Care Act, by a number of things that are likely to be undone, perhaps in the very early days of a Trump administration.
Sam Zeff.
Yeah, I agree that we heard exactly what we needed to hear from the president and from Hillary Clinton. The president, I think, very graciously obviously looking back and thanking the Bush administration, trying to set a tone for what is going forward. But I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to is the next Donald Trump speech. I think we heard everything that he was supposed to say last night, felt to me a bit perfunctory, but he said the right things. The real telling speech is going to be the next speech, now that he's reacting to all of this. Can I just mention one just a little bit of news here before we take a break, that Politico had a piece up this morning with some speculation who might be in a Donald Trump cabinet. Just want to mention that Sam Brownback, governor of Kansas, is right up there near the top for Secretary of Agriculture. If in fact that comes to pass, I think that would have enormous consequences in a legislative session that's already going to have enormous consequences.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that. Would be huge in the state of Kansas, obviously, for a whole host of reasons. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with our very good conversation here with our panel, looking at all the results in Missouri and Kansas last night. Our phone number again, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to UpToDate on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday, we heard voter stories from listeners at the ballot box, a glimpse into the mind of the horror novelist behind Ghost Stories and the Blue Rose Trilogy. You can listen to those conversations at kcur.org/uptodate. Tomorrow, a break from election coverage. Imagine that. It's about time. As we learn about the Nelson-Atkins next plans for expansion and how it'll affect nearby neighborhoods. Also, we'll have a visit from Pulitzer Prize winner Thomas Friedman from the New York Times. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, this hour, we're analyzing results from Missouri and Kansas, the big election last night. Dave Helling, Jason Hancock from The Star, Sam Zeff, Brian Ellison from KCUR, and Jolie Justice, the Kansas City Councilwoman, former Senate Minority Leader in Jefferson City. Let's move just quickly, folks, to we opened the show with a conversation with Congressman Kevin Yoder. He slid past Jay Seide last night, 48-44 partial results. I think he won by more than that based on our conversation, maybe by 8 or 9 points at the end. What do you make of it? Sam, what do you make of that win last night by Kevin Yoder? Strong performance in the wake of at one point, a tough challenge.
Yeah, they were really running scared maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. The polls, we saw one from the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee that had Seide within 2 or 3 points. I believe that the internals showed the same thing with Yoder. At that time, the polls, private polling was showing that Clinton was looking like she was going to win the 3rd Congressional District by 10 points. But after the Comey letter, I think that had a profound effect on what happened in the 3rd Congressional District. The polls started to widen. Republicans, as they will do, especially in Johnson County, wanted to come home. And in the end, it really wasn't a race for Yoder.
David?
Yeah, I agree with that. I would also say that once the Comey letter hit, it was incumbent on Jay Seide to come out of the trench and sort of make himself known and make his positive case.
Which he did not do.
Which I just don't think he did. And I think, you know, if they look back on that race, they'll regret that, because I think there was still a chance, you know, a 10-point race, probably not. But you want to leave all your cards on the table, and I'm not sure he did that. So
get the impression that another Democrat, maybe a more seasoned Democrat, even a young Democrat with some experience, might have been
maybe,
a better candidate.
Maybe, but a 10-point margin is huge in that district, and the Republican wave was inexorable last night. It hit every district, every state. I mean, if he won by 10, Kevin Yoder, I'd guess half of that came from the wave and half of that from the sort of natural things in the district. One quick thing about Sam talking about the polls. Do we believe polls at all anymore, ladies and gentlemen? I mean, the polling Amen. Mechanism was so deeply wrong yesterday that, I've written this story for The Star, and yet I'm just like everyone else when the polls start coming out. I'm writing it. I'm looking at it, trying to study it. I think the way we survey public opinion is under enormous stress in this country, and I think the evidence of that was on our TV screen.
We talked to one pollster yesterday, David, who did an enormous sampling of Missouri. just a deeper dive than we've ever seen before.
17,000 questions.
17,000 folks out there. That pollster had Donald Trump winning by 9 points. It was more than double that.
Right,
by the end
and
of
he
the
had
night.
Kander ahead by a tenth of a point. Yeah. So. You know, there are margins of error, although the margin of error in that poll was less than 1%, and still it was off by 3 points in the Senate race and 10 points in the presidential. I just think the polling mechanism is not as precise as we think it might be.
Yeah. Because the polling mechanism was developed for an electorate that no longer exists. We don't understand the electorate that's out there now, the electorate that elected Donald Trump as president. And so the pollsters, the scientists behind polling, are going to have to go back to the drawing board and figure out some new tools, I think.
Lots of phone calls here. 816-235-2888. Let's get some reactions to the results last night. Jennifer from Prairie Village, good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for holding on, Jennifer. I appreciate it. Yes.
No problem. You know, I feel like I can roll with the punches of elections. Just, you know, sometimes my side wins, sometimes not. But there are some things that just can't wait for action. And the fact remains that we're in a climate change crisis. Scientists are saying that if we don't have aggressive action on climate change in this decade, that we may not be able to prevent, you know, warming that cannot be halted. And that just feels to me as a parent really unacceptable. And now we have a president that doesn't seem to understand that it's a problem. So that is just very concerning to me.
Jennifer, thanks for your call. I appreciate
I'll take it.
It
off the air.
You bet. Let me go to Joe from Lenexa. Joe, you're on Up to Date.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Joe.
My question would be, despite what Donald Trump seems to think, we are not a monarchy. We don't elect the king, and we have three branches of government. My quick question to the guests would be, do they think the other two branches of government will be an effective check and balance against what Trump might want to do?
Jolie Justice, what do you think?
You know, I have some concerns, obviously, based on some of the comments that President-elect Trump said during the campaign cycle about the judiciary in particular. And one of the good pieces of news that we do have is that on the Senate level, they don't have 60 folks right now. So that's at least a check.
Which is different than what Barack Obama found in 2009,
absolutely.
Where he had that kind of majority in the Senate.
I will say this. I have some concerns. I'm going to bring it back to Missouri very quickly about the checks and balances, because we have just elected a governor in the state of Missouri who wants to go to elect
next.
The judges.
Yeah.
And so I have some real concerns about all of the power being concentrated in one political party or ideology. And I really hope that we can spend a lot of time really doing what Congressman Yoder talked about at the beginning, which is work across party lines.
The other thing that I think is so important to understand, and I think in this sense, President Obama got it wrong in his address just a few moments ago. It is right that we have campaigns and we offer different views of issues and then we vote and agendas are enacted or not enacted. But some things in this country are not subject to referendum. We don't vote on them. Civil rights, personal rights, First Amendment rights, Second Amendment rights in some cases. Those things are guaranteed to individuals and are not subject to plebiscite. And I think that that's at the root of why people today are so distraught about the Trump presidency, because they believe some of those more personal rights will, in essence, become subject to votes in a very hostile political environment. And that can be concerning for a lot of
Brian, you made a similar point earlier.
Well, that's right. And I think the folks who are most vulnerable, the folks who are most protected by those provisions of the Constitution, are the folks who really have to be perhaps most vigilant or others vigilant on their behalf about preserving those checks and balances. I mean, one of the questions we might legitimately ask is checks and balances against what policy? So Councilwoman Justice mentions Governor Greitens' policy agenda. We're not totally sure what that policy agenda will be. To quote Chris Kosterlein from out on the campaign trail, we can see from the advertisements he's very good at blowing things up. How will he be at putting things back together? I assume he is able to put things back together, but I don't think we're totally sure what those policy initiatives will
be. Jason Hancock from the Star is going to tell us the answer to that question in just a moment, Sam.
One quick comment on what Joe had to say. His charge of electing a monarch is exactly what we heard when Barack Obama was elected twice, and it is disheartening to think think that campaigns have now come to the come to this point where we believe that we are electing a dictator or a monarch as opposed to somebody in the opposition party. If we can, and I don't really know, based on all of the guns I saw in ads and all of the crazy charges, when we're going to transition out of that, but it would sure be a better America if we could.
Okay, 816-235-2888. If you're just joining us, we're kicking around all the results from Missouri and Kansas last night. I want to get to the governor's race that was just mentioned a minute ago here on the Missouri side. We saw Eric Greitens, a political newcomer, defeat Attorney General Chris Koster, 51-45%. Jason Hancock from The Star covers the State House for the newspaper. What do you think an Eric Greitens administration is going to look like? Where are we going from here, Jason?
Well, it's funny because, you know, you have a president and a governor of Missouri now that both sort of thumb their nose at their own party in a lot of ways.
Yes.
You know, Eric Greitens got into some hot water with Senate leadership because he was constantly calling the State House and the people in the State House corrupt career politicians, insiders, special interests. Now they both have to deal with these people that they were flaunting. The difference in Missouri is, though, Republicans have such massive majorities. There is literally no check on what they can do now. And so they're going to send him a lot of bills, a lot of these conservative policy priorities that have been stymied for the last few years, because even though they had big majorities, they didn't have veto-proof majorities on a lot of these things like right to work, like reforming the legal system, which Councilwoman Justice talked about. Those things are going to end up on Greitens' desk. There's no reason to believe he's not just going to sign all of them. You know, he's spoken favorably a lot of this stuff. And meanwhile, the things that people thought might maybe could have gotten done under Chris Koster, something like Medicaid expansion, that's dead and buried and gone. That is a non-starter. That was a huge issue for Greitens, and it's always been mostly dead in the legislature anyway. I think what Missourians did last night was they unleashed this pent-up conservative agenda that has been sort of, it's had its successes, obviously, over the years, but it's just going to flood out now that there's nothing standing in its way. And I guess we'll see what the long-term consequences of that are.
Councilwoman Julie Justice, again, former Senate Minority Leader in Jeff City, you spent years trying to put some speed bumps in front of Republicans who wanted to pass all kinds of bills. Is Jason Hancock right? No speed bumps, no barriers now to what Republicans might do down there.
He is correct, and I want to also throw into the mix the fact that because they have supermajorities, they can also change the rules. And so any of the rules that have existed over time to create some of that situation where we can slow things down or we can at least have that deliberative conversation about what might be best for Missouri, at any given moment with a supermajority, you can change the rules. And so you've got that piece. You also have to add into the fact that we have the Hancock Amendment in the state of Missouri. So if we make any substantive, huge, sweeping changes relating to taxation and revenue for the state of Missouri, we can't go back in future legislatures and fix that. We have to take that to a statewide vote, to a vote of the people, which would be, I think, really disastrous. And then the third piece is we still have unlimited campaign contributions. And so even though we passed something last night, I think that's going to probably see an immediate court review because I don't believe that it's constitutional under the United States Constitution, and so we're going to see a challenge of that. But you're going to see huge money coming in from folks who want to buy access to this super conservative legislature and governor's office, and I think we're going to see a real problem for years.
Also, keep in mind that social issues like abortion particularly not only will rise to the top of the agenda, I think, pretty quickly in Jefferson City and be signed by Eric Greitens, tougher restrictions, which have been a battle in Missouri, as you know, Steve, for 30 years.
Yeah.
But you now have an attorney general who is explicitly promised to be aggressive in fighting against abortion rights, not only in the state of Missouri but across the nation. He's got a reputation for that. So I think you'll see early on a pretty intense effort to make it much, much harder to get to get an abortion in Missouri. And then you put in addition to that, a national government that won't be funding Planned Parenthood. I mean, I think a lot of that stuff, the sort of, you know, where the rubber meets the road stuff will be pretty evident pretty quickly.
Now, Jason Hancock, this is so interesting to me. Eric Greitens is a political newcomer. He's never held public office before. I believe Jefferson City, the state of Missouri, has never seen anything like this before. What do you make of that aspect of his ability to lead the state?
I mean, he definitely caught lightning in a bottle. I mean, nobody was really taking him that seriously before the primary. And even up until the weekend before the election, there were folks that said, well, Koster still got this, you know, 2 or 3 points, get out the vote, the Democrats get out the vote organization. That's worth a couple points right there. That should carry Koster across the finish line. But and Greitens' people thought it was close. To their credit, they thought it was a pretty close race. They thought both sides thought they'd be biting their nails going past midnight, but I don't think anybody saw the Trump wave. And when you have the top of the ticket winning by 19 points, I mean, if you look at the down ballot, it goes from 19 points Trump. It falls off precipitously after that. You know, it was only a 6-point margin for Greitens. It was only a 3-point margin for Blunt. If it wasn't for Trump's wave, I don't think we would have seen this takeover of state government. I think Koster was perfectly positioned to be the type of Democrat that wins these races, you know, pro-gun, pro-agriculture, pro-tax cut Democrat, but he just got swamped, and the enthusiasm was on the Republican side, and Greitens was able to tap into that and ride the wave. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this guy who has never run, you know, he's run a nonprofit, but he's never held elected office, is now the chief executive of the state of Missouri, and will have to navigate those waters for the next 4 years, and right, maybe beyond, if he's got the aspirations people think that he does.
Brian Ellison.
I think the one wild card we do need to remember here is that anytime you have one party exercising such a wide range of power, you open yourself up to sort of internal divisions within that power structure.
Right.
Certainly, Eric Greitens is an example of someone who Republicans have quietly been saying, you know, we'd actually be more comfortable with a Chris Koster as governor. At least a few legislators were saying that. So I am not totally sure that you're going to see a raft of bills smoothly sail across the governor's desk without some tension conflict in the Missouri General Assembly, but certainly it does have a more conservative complexion than it had before.
Jason Hancock, let's talk just briefly about the race for Attorney General. We've already alluded to the fact that Josh Hawley, the Republican, again a political newcomer, has won that office 58-41 over Teresa Hensley, again a stomping there. And just a quick note, Josh Hawley got more votes than anybody on the Missouri ballot, including Donald Trump. How do you size that up, Jason?
This guy's a rising star in the Republican Party and conservative movement. I mean, he was getting national attention during the primary. You know, you had these national conservative outlets like the National Review and the Weekly Standard writing pieces about him when he was just an announced candidate. Yeah, he was involved in a lawsuit, the Hobby Lobby lawsuit, which challenged the contraception mandate in Obamacare. He's got a high profile. He was a former clerk for Chief Justice John Roberts. Like, in the way that we talked about Jason Kander being sort of the shooting star of the Democratic Party, I think a lot of folks nationally see Josh Hawley as an up-and-comer that, I mean, I think he's 36 years old, and now he's the Attorney General, never held public office before. He's a face that we're going to see a lot of over the next, you know, 10, 15 years. And I think Democrats are going to look back and see this is the time they could have derailed a potential a problem for them for many years to come. If he rises through the ranks of Republican politics.
I think that's exactly right. But I also think that this is a very telling race for the other side of the ticket as well. Teresa Hensley was broadly regarded as an effective Cass County prosecutor, but here she lost a congressional race 4 years ago. She lost her own reelection as prosecutor a couple of years ago. She's lost another one, and it was very telling what she said to her very small gathering at her watch party last night. She said, if you dedicate your career to public service and it comes down to voting Republican or Democrat instead of who's qualified and what they stand for, it's time to quit bothering. As she announced that she's done with seeking public office, and it says a lot.
But clearly, thousands of Democrats in Missouri voted for Donald Trump. I mean, you know, I think it's more complicated than Republican versus Democrat in Missouri and in every state in the country. I think it's urban, rural. I think it's educated, less educated. I think it may be a little bit minority, majority. I mean, young, old. I mean, the divisions in our country are not just left and right. They're cultural. And I think Missouri screams that at us, that people believe they are not being paid attention to by, broadly speaking, the institutions that they grew up with. And if they're given a chance to sort of fire back, they will do it. And they did it Tuesday.
Julie, Justice, the Democrats have no bench, it seems like, in Missouri suddenly. Chris Koster has been defeated. Jason Kander has been defeated. Where do you guys go for future candidates for
Julie Justice, of course.
For governor.
She's waiting.
No, I think that we do have a bench because I think that we've seen Democrats lose statewide elections before and then come back. I mean, don't forget that Claire McCaskill lost as for governor before she won as senator. I think we have a robust bench. I think we are going to have to figure out, though, how we pull together all the folks that Dave was just talking about. I mean, the reality is that we have a really incredibly interesting state. Our southeast part of our state is one of the poorest congressional districts in the nation. And by all rights, they should have been voting, in my opinion, Democratic for the past 20, 30 years.
They
but instead,
do
they don't do that.
Yeah.
Why is that? Why are they doing that? And then we have folks coming in with a message this time that, you know what, we hear you, and they double down and make even bigger promises. We've got to figure out how to communicate with all of the people in Missouri.
But, okay. And you have to figure that out while not betraying what you believe in. That's the, I mean, you could say anything you want to the voters of Southeast Missouri, Julie, but you know, they make judgments based on church issues, you know, things that we would not think are economic issues. How do the Democrats solve that problem of addressing those folks without betraying what they believe in a state like Missouri? That's a real, real conundrum.
I need to get some more work done and scoot over to the Kansas side of the state line with Sam Zeff from KCUR and talk about what happened in the legislature yesterday. Sam, what happened with that big judge retention vote that a lot of folks were very concerned about?
Yeah, let me tackle the justices first. That was a very contentious, is very expensive. Both sides probably spent $1 million or more.
For the state Supreme Court we're talking about here,
and
Court of
there
Appeals.
There were five justices up for retention. Four of them were targeted by Republicans, by conservatives, Kansans for Life. They dropped about $600,000 in advertising try to oust those four justices. In the end, they all came away with 54% of the vote. So they never trailed. I think they won comfortably. But still, in years past, those retention elections, judges and justices would get around 70%. So clearly this money had had some effect.
How about the state legislature?
Well, as we mentioned early on, pretty good night for Democrats. They picked up one seat in the Senate, so now they have nine. And they picked up 13 seats in the House, including four new Democrats from Johnson County.
If those are significant numbers, could you make an argument that given the tumult in Kansas created by Governor Brownback's policies, the Democrats should have done even better, Sam?
Well, I think, first of all, I think a lot of conservatives were ousted in the primary. And so those more moderate voices, whether be they Republican or Democrat, were feeling pretty good about what's going to happen in the legislature. There is now a working majority between Democrats and moderate Republicans in both houses. Will they vote lockstep on every issue? Absolutely not. There will be divisions. But as I think we talked about this morning, on something like closing the LLC loophole, I think they're going to come together. I think they will depart ways if it comes to raising the marginal income tax rate in Kansas. I think on a couple of other issues that you may also see them come together. I think there's going to be a run to repeal the campus concealing carry law in Kansas, and I think you'll see Democrats and moderates coming together on that. There also may be a run at repealing the death penalty, but I think that's way down on the agenda.
Just quickly, back on the Missouri side of the state line, a couple of ballot issues I wanted to get to. Two cigarette taxes went down in flames, Proposition A, Constitutional Amendment 3. Were those surprises, Jason Hancock?
Not really. There was so much of backlash and infighting between what would normally be the constituencies that would push those tobacco taxes that it was hard to see where they would get those across the finish line when they couldn't do it when they were all united 4 years ago. So it wasn't that surprising to see them go down and go down pretty badly.
Dave Helling, campaign finance, a move to put limits back on the size of donations passed overwhelmingly 70% yes, 30% no. Is that a surprise?
No. The voters in Missouri have said before they want to limit campaign contributions. They also approved voter ID rather easily, I think, in Missouri.
63% yes.
So I think both of those were expected to pass and did.
Okay. And finally, light rail goes down in flames in Jackson County. 115,000 votes saying no, 77,000 saying yes. Who wants to? Jolie, you've been looking at transportation in the city. You surprised Clay Chastain goes down to defeat?
Not surprised at all. I think it was a combination of people who were not supportive of Clay Chastain's light rail. And I think there were some confused voters out there who are opposed to the existing streetcar who thought they were voting against an extension of the existing streetcar.
So it might have been defeated by a larger margin had folks understood more clearly what it was.
I think that, let me just put it this way. I hope that's the last that we will see of Clay Chastain.
From your lips to God's ears, I think.
We've heard that before.
And that's a good way to wind this program up. I'm sorry I couldn't get to all our phone calls here. Alberto, Dave, and others, I'm sorry we couldn't get there. I want to thank Dave Helling, Jason Hancock from The Star. Gentlemen, thanks very much.
You bet.
From KCUR, Sam Zeff and Brian Ellison.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
And from the Kansas City City Council, Councilwoman Jolie Justice. Jolie, thanks very much.
Thanks, Steve.
What a night it was. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Follow me at Steve Kraske. Tomorrow, hear about the Nelson Atkins latest plan for expansion and how it might affect surrounding neighborhoods. Also, Pulitzer Prize winner Tom Friedman joins us. He's with the New York Times. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, Ryan Hennessy, and Corinne Dorian. Our senior producer, that's Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.